You're listening to Blue Collar CEO, the podcast that's all about helping you build a better, more profitable, and more sustainable home service business. Each week, we'll cover a different topic that will help enable your company to move forward to success. And here's your host, Ryan Redding.
What is up, Blue Collar CEOs? It's Ryan. It is great to be with you today. I'm coming at you with an amazing conversation with the owner of Eagle Pipe Heating and Air. They're an HVAC contractor. They specialize in commercial gas piping and residential light commercial heating and cooling. We're going to be meeting with the owner of the business. Her name's Lori. Lori has a crazy journey to land in the trades. She first started her business arc building $10 million franchises for McDonald's and then retired in 2011. And then in 2012 decided she was done being retired. So she opened two Pandora jewelry stores in two different states. She has had so much success. She was recently named Service Nations Alliance 2022 Woman of the Year Award. This woman is a wealth of knowledge who has transitioned and across multiple industries successfully, one after another after another. There's a lot to learn from her. Let's get going. Let's introduce you to Lori. Lori, I know you're extremely busy. You have a lot of things going on. So I'm really fortunate that you've taken the time to like just stop and talk. But for those maybe who don't know who you are or what you do, I guess let's just start there. Lori, who are you? What do you do?
Well, thanks, Ryan. It's my pleasure to spend this next 40, 45 minutes speaking with you. So a little bit about me. I started out many, many years ago. I was with McDonald's Corporation. And from there, I became a McDonald's franchisee. And I was fortunate enough to build my own $10 million company. And back in 2011, I said, oh, you know, I'm so busy working. It's time for me to move from the East Coast back to the West Coast. So I ended up selling all of my McDonald's restaurants and retired for about a year and a half and said, oh, this isn't for me. I'm just way too active. I'd been traveling the world.
And now, you don't strike me as someone who enjoys retirement super well.
No. And, you know, to be honest with you, I was traveling the world and I said, I can't afford myself anymore because I was where in the world's Lori? I'd be in Tibet or I would be in India and I would be just loving life. But I had to get back to work because that's kind of what I do, a lot of business. So from then I did some Pandora jewelry stores. And then in 2015, I created my HVAC and commercial gas piping business, which is what brought me here today.
Okay, so hold on. Let's walk through that because that is an unusual sequence of events for a lot of people. Hell, a lot of people probably would struggle to get the head around that. So you went from running a burger joint, multiple burger joints, McDonald's franchises. I've got friends who own them, so I know the scope of what's entailed. And you're like, okay, I'm done. Sell out. You're going to travel the world and go, hey, no, I'm bored now traveling. So let's run a jewelry store. Like that's awkward transition number one for a lot of people to be like, why are you going from hamburgers to bracelets? And then after that you go, hey, I'm going to open up an HVAC company. How on earth, like, why did you land in your current seat? Like why, help me understand, like, why did you choose the trades coming from your career arc?
Sure. So I was fortunate with McDonald's and also Pandora. I was the owner of those businesses. So it makes a huge difference whether you're the manager or the owner. So I looked at those businesses. And when I was really looking at what I wanted to expand, the reason why I jumped into the trades was my brother's been in the trades for many, many years. And I looked at how hard all of the tradesmen work. You know, I'd see nights and weekends and holidays, and I wasn't seeing where he was getting a lot of not only just financial gain, but man, as you age in this profession, it becomes very challenging. And he loves to go out and do the work, but he is not the business part of it. So at some point when I first sold all my restaurants and I had quite a bit of cash on hand, I said, hey, let's start up this business. And he wasn't quite ready yet to do it. So about 2015, I said, that's it. I'm going to do it. So I'm 100% woman-owned business. My brother does work for me. He's in charge of a lot of my gas piping and runs different divisions. And he's my go-to guy when I say, hey, you know, what do you think? But at the end of the day, I make all the business decisions and have the responsibility and liability. So I think the biggest transition was I really went into it to try to help them out. Now that I'm in it, I absolutely love it. It is such a phenomenal business to be in.
Do you feel like there was difficulty entering into an industry that you didn't have much direct experience in? It sounds like you had like anecdotal experience by watching him, but like the firsthand sort of understanding of the industry pressures on the kind of all the different forces that are exerted on the space that you now know well. And also in a space that's historically not, there's not many women, like especially 100% majority leaders that are also women. Do you feel like that being underrepresented in an industry that you didn't know much on coming in, was that difficult for you, or did it make it easier for you? Like you didn't know, you didn't have like these kind of fears or these boundaries or these arbitrary guidelines put in that other people who are entrenched in the industry for so long might just by default assume. Like, how is that transitioning to you in that sort of way?
So it's a combination. You don't know what you don't know. And so I also didn't put any boundaries. I went ahead, when I jumped into this industry, I went ahead and hired she's my operations manager currently. But at the time when I interviewed her, she came off of Craigslist. Her name is Alicia Wilson. And she said, you don't just need an office manager, you need a personal assistant. So as her and I started going through this adventure, because when I opened up my company, I was still running Pandora jewelry businesses in two different states. So I was out in Boise, Idaho. I was out in Salt Lake City, and Alicia was holding down the fort. Because when I started, there was three of us. There was me, my brother, and Alicia. So I said, we're going on this journey together. So her and I went ahead and we started taking some classes. We worked with our suppliers, our distributors. We started taking classes. And then one of the best things I did was I joined Service Nation Alliance, because when I joined them, I really understood where I needed to put more of an emphasis on HVAC residential replacements versus just like, yeah, we'll do some of that HVAC stuff. And then we were majority doing a lot of gas piping. So I think when I went into this industry, I have always been 100% woman owner. And so whether it was McDonald's or whether it was Pandora, I was up against that because it's unusual. Most of the time, it's usually a partnership. And I've always been the 100% owner. So I didn't really take it. I took it more as a challenge. And I just gave an example with some of our suppliers. They are used to working with, you know, males who have very large companies. They're running 20, 30, 40 trucks. And so we did a supplier review. And as we were doing the supplier review, the supplier said, wow, you're down like 300,000. And I said, geez, my business is up 54%. Hint, had you been maybe taking care of me, maybe I would have been spending more money with you. So as we went through that, they understood they weren't giving me the service. They weren't giving me the time of day. So I like to think I'm kind of like this little minnow in this big fishbowl, especially I'm out in the Seattle area. And they wouldn't give me the time of day. So I went ahead, and next thing I knew, I had more training, more development, those type of things. So I think anytime I go up against anything like this, I just go ahead and I kind of dig in and I look at my experience with business and I'm like, hey, if I'm going to spend a couple $1 million a year with you, you will pay attention to my business.
It's interesting because it's true when you say it this way. It sounds like what you're able to bring to the table, which look, I love the men and women in the trades, but for so many of them, they struggle with like business acumen and kind of business knowledge. They know their skills required to be a plumber or be an HVAC tech. Like they do those things exceptionally well, but transitioning into the business space is often a challenge. It seems like that's the thing that you bring to the table. Like you are able to navigate different industries, not because you're a wunderkind necessarily, but you just speak the language of business. You understand how these dynamics work. And while it's not that there's no challenges, it makes it easier for you to navigate them, regardless if it's fast food, which is extremely competitive, extremely tight margins you have to manage all the time, or jewelry, or now you're getting into HVAC and service. And you also mentioned, by the way, just to give you a pat on the back, you mentioned Service Nation Alliance, amazing organization, but you recently won the 2022 Women of the Year Award. So congrats for that.
Thank you. I was really shocked at Women in HVACR when it was presented. I do a mentoring for an advisory board. It's called AB80, which is the advisory board. We have like 150 members. You have to be a Service Nation Alliance member to join. And I think that was a huge part of the award because we meet every Thursday. We are the backbone of the businesses. A lot of them are CSRs or dispatchers, office. Some are owners, some are general managers, and they are the women that are really driving this industry and helping out, whether it's their owner or whoever the ownership partnership would be. I was very honored to have that award.
And rightfully so. You've earned every bit of that, and congratulations on everything that went into that. And it seems like in hearing you talk, even on your relationship with Women in HVACR, which we're a proud supporter of, and we've had many people from Women in HVACR on our show. It seems like this idea of like, it's more than just peer-to-peer networking. It seems like you have an affinity or maybe a bias towards mentoring other people in the trades too. Would you agree that mentorship is something that's important to you?
Oh, absolutely. I've been mentoring women for 40 years. I started out when I was with McDonald's. We were mentoring. If I was a corporate staff person, we would mentor, the women that worked in the restaurants. As a owner operator, I mentored. I was part of a organization which was called Women Operator Network with McDonald's, and we had over 600 members. So when I went into the trades, the very first thing I did, I said, okay, where are these women groups? And I stumbled upon Women in HVACR. And next thing I knew, I was at a conference and met a bunch of folks like Crystal Williams from McWilliams and Sons and Lemon Seed Marketing. And, you know, Crystal, she says to me, what's your story? And so this, we came up with my burgers to bangles to pipes, a lifelong business plan, because everybody's like, what's your story? How did you get into the trades? So from there, I ended up being asked to be on the board. So I was on the board for Women in HVACR. And this year, I'm fortunate enough to be the vice president. And so I'm very excited. I'll be working on the conference and working on many different parts of that organization. And at the same time, I'm kind of juggling that. I do personal mentorship with quite a few of the women that are not only Women in HVAC members. Some are Lady Titans, some are, you know, from other groups. And so I have some regular meetings with them. And then I just most recently, I'm on the advisory board for WIP, which is Women in Plumbing and Piping. And so that one fascinates me because I'm putting plumbing into my business. I do a lot of gas piping with some of the major utility companies, but that's a real startup. It started in November, and I'm very anxious to work with Angie Snow, is also on the board, and Susan Fru.
Angie's a great person.
Oh, she's amazing. She's one of my idols when it comes to this industry. And so working together, I think our talents, not only with business, Women in HVACR, we can also work with Women in Plumbing and Piping to help with mentorship and also help them set up some structure. They have a phenomenal executive director, Kim. And so I think we're just going to kind of add, I like to say, our 2 cents worth in helping that organization grow.
It's really inspiring to see someone like you that has your pedigree and your experience and your success always find a way to pour into the lives of others and help develop other people's journey. And that's one of the things I think I love about the trades in general is it's very collaborative. It's very supportive. People are willing to help. Unless maybe you're in the same market, you directly compete. People seem to be willing to share insights, experience, lessons they've learned. I'm curious. So, I think a lot of people look at someone like you on the outside and go, you have so much to give. You have so much knowledge. You have so much insight and expertise to offer. But I wonder if you also gain anything like this reverse mentorship role. Like, do you ever find yourself receiving value and developing your own skills, capabilities, leanings by working with other people in a mentorship sort of capacity? Like, are you secretly sometimes the recipient of that relationship?
Oh, every day. Not only with mentorship. I started mentoring one young lady, and the first thing she said to me is, she said, you can learn from me also. And I said, absolutely, I can't wait. So I learn from everyone, especially a lot of the folks that I'm mentoring. They've been in the industry a lot longer than I have been. And what the difference is, I just have a different set of business skills, because I always call it, you have to pay to play. So after I've been owning my own companies now for how many years? I started my first company in 1997. So after going through paying huge amounts of money to CPAs and tax attorneys and business attorneys, and I did business in New York for 11 years. So it was a constant. Don't bother serving me papers. Just go ahead. I'm at my office. What lawsuit is coming at me? You know, so I like to take a lot of those experiences. I share, but I gain so much. And it's not just in mentorship. So I do a lot of community things also. I'm on the board for Habitat for Humanity. That's a phenomenal organization that we help with, you know, the housing crises that so many people have situations with in their individual. And talk about learning. You know, we did a retreat with Habitat. I was able to pick up a lot of skills there and then end up pouring them into a retreat that I did with women in HVACR. So it's kind of a two-way street. You mentor, but you're also learning all the time.
When my experience is, when someone like you has experience in different industries, it sometimes helps you understand things, even predict trends and forecast the future a bit, because you have more experience, you have more inputs, you have more anecdotes to kind of pull from and rely on. What when you look at the trades as it is now, kind of the landscape from an industry's perspective, what things are on your radar about things where you see the way things are going, either with, it could be with economic restrictions or pressures, it could be the customer expectations, because a lot of those have changed a lot over the past 3 years, like since COVID. Like, how do you see the mix of the industry for the trades changing in the next few years?
I think there's going to be a little bit of a challenge for us, but I think anybody that has a well-established business and they have a few dollars in the bank, they're going to be okay. But it's people, people, people. I just did a booth at AHR with women in HVACR, and I can't tell you the amount of folks, mainly men, that walked up to the booth and said, where do I get women trades? And I'm like, well, if I could open up that curtain and have 20 of them run out, we'd all be in good shape. So I think just the skilled workforce. I have a couple older gentlemen that work for me, and we're making sure without a doubt they're training on the apprenticeship side of things. We have an apprenticeship program that we're putting together. So people are going to be a factor as you see all of these tech companies laying off 8,000, 9,000, 10,000 people. Where are they going to work? Not all of them are going to want to work in a crawl space, up on a roof, you know, doing new construction. So how do we find the people that want to do a career change? So people will be an issue. I think some folks are pulling back on cash now. In my area, the brand new construction is going like crazy, which that's not my number one moneymaker. I mean, we do okay with new construction, but I get tired of being the banker with the general contractors. Mm. So I have to keep that balance of replacements, making sure we have enough contracts, and then also making sure that we can sprinkle in that new construction. We're my other thing that I have to be careful of is Seattle is very much going against the whole gas scenario with, you know, whether it's gas stoves, gas piping, those type of things. Now, I do work for the major utility companies, Puget Sound Energy and Cascade Natural Gas. So what I'm doing is with my business, we don't have work directly in Seattle. We're going outside of that area, and I'm doing work down in Baker City, Oregon, Ontario, and we're looking to do our work. We have a job up and coming. We're going to bid out in Las Vegas. So I think I look for every opportunity, and to make sure that in 2023, as we go forward, that I have to protect all of my people so that we have good jobs, well-paying jobs. We're training people, and service-wise with the customers. Everything we do really evolves around what we can do to take care of our customers. So it's a variety of different things, but those are the things that work for me. Customer service, training of employees, and I look for opportunities every chance I get.
Customer service is something that I think a lot of businesses have neglected. And then except for, not political, but I think the way consumers expected businesses to engage in the wake of 2020, it put the focus where companies had to be empathetic on the customer, understand their mindset, understand the customer's experience, because customers at that point were like, they weren't going to put up with what they used to tolerate. And so I think some companies got the memo quickly and they were able to continue to focus on the customer. Some really struggled to make the transition or to maintain that sort of effort. Now, and I'm curious on the workforce component, because obviously in the trades, there's a lot of conversation about not enough people. And I understand the statistics that are bearing into it. Do you feel like some of your attitude and even the way that you're framing the problem for hiring, training, taking care of your team, the retention component, how much of that came from your experience in McDonald's, where the hiring and labor force is a significant part of your operations? Like, how much does your experience in the fast food industry influence the way you think about the labor force in the trades?
Sure. Relentless, I guess you could put that right under my name. And I had to do that with McDonald's when I was a corporate employee, when I became a franchisee. And I'll give you an example. I owned a large travel plaza over the New York State Thruway. When I say I own it, I had the McDonald's franchise on it. New York State Thruway owned the actual facilities. That creates many challenges working in that type of environment. And I would end up between Memorial Day and Labor Day, we would literally do almost $1 million a month at that location. And that would be my McDonald's restaurants. And then I also created other special venues. So where do I go and gather up 200 employees? So what I did was I partnered with international. I partnered with companies that I would go ahead and I would hire people from all over the world. They were college students. We would hire them. They would come in on a J-1 visa, and we were able to put them in my locations and work for 3 months, and then they could travel. Now, that doesn't work for everybody, and it's way more difficult in the trades. In fact, I've looked at some other opportunities, because we also did that with what we would consider our shift managers. We would bring them on a management training program for 18 months. The trades is different because of the skill set that you're looking for. But when I say how I related to what I used to do with McDonald's and what I do today, I think I have that same approach. It's relentless, whether it's out finding people in individual locations. I'll give you a good idea. When I was a McDonald's franchisee, every time I'd go through a drive-through at a bank, I'd try to recruit the young lady out the window, because she could get those cars to the bank quickly. She should certainly get the cars through the McDonald's drive-through quickly. So I kind of take that same approach. I don't care if I go to Home Depot, if I go to Lowe's, if I go into a lot of, like, we have Les Schwab out here. They sell tires and they have a great customer service. Those are the folks that I'm trying to go out and recruit. What I will tell you is anyone that we do interview, I always like give them the lay of the land, what they're up against, what they can expect. And also, I want them to make sure they always give their 2 weeks notice. And and leave on good terms. I'm not one that's going to go in and just pirate other employees from other companies. But if you can't hold on to your employees, there's a reason why. So what are you doing with that culture?
Yeah, I think that's a good point. And I appreciate how you are, you're mindful on, hey, you're not going to try to go out of your way to poach, but at the same time, people, you should focus on taking care of your team, focus on your retention efforts, because it's much more difficult to hire people from cold, train them up, develop them, grow them, get them up to speed with all of your SOPs, than to just take care of them, make them not want to leave to begin with. It's clear that you have a tremendous amount of experience and passion, and it's obvious why you like mentoring other people, because it seems like it's just kind of who you are. You like to share from your experience and help other people succeed. If somebody, Lori, wanted to like reach out to you, maybe ask questions, maybe even see if you had the opportunity to like mentor them on a one-on-one or a peer sort of group, how might somebody reach out to you?
So there's a couple different ways. You could always go through Women in HVACR website, because I'm listed there as the vice president. I can give you my email by all means. They certainly can email me. It's my first name, Lori, L-O-R-I, at eaglepipemechanical.com. They can always send me an email. So there's many ways, and I'm more than happy to. I get emails all the time, and sometimes it's just a conversation. And so I would be more than happy to take any emails from folks and see how we could connect.
I appreciate that. I'll make sure that your email address is in the show notes for anyone who wants to reach out. But also, we'll make sure that the Women in HVACR link is also linked in the show notes. Does WIP also have a website yet that we could also link?
Yes, they do. Yeah, WIP has a website. In fact, it's becoming very, very active. They can also reach out LinkedIn. They can, you know, Instagram, all of the above. There's all kinds of ways. A lot of people have connected through LinkedIn. So
cool. I'll make sure that all that information is in the show notes for anyone who wants to join these organizations and the work they're doing, connect with you directly. Lori, thank you so much for taking the time, because I know you're very busy. Thank you for the positive influence you have on the trades. It's an honor to have you on the show. Thanks for stopping by.
Thanks, Ryan. It's been my pleasure. Thank you.
This episode was hosted by Ryan Redding, author of the book on digital marketing for plumbing and HVAC contractors, and founder of Levergy, the digital marketing solution for serious home service companies. You can subscribe to Blue Collar CEO on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Visit us online at bluecollar.ceo and find us on Instagram. And don't forget to subscribe and leave a review. Thanks for tuning in. We'll be back next week with another awesome episode. See you soon.